Life moves pretty fast. Unless you're watching the Ferris Bueller TV show from 1990, in which case, it moves incredibly slow. Ferris Bueller is next on Fanicek. Season 2 premiere of Fanicek. Welcome back to the show, my man.
I am stoked to be here. Season 2, can't believe it. Season 1 was such a hit. Can't wait to see what you've got in store for
such
season 2.
Such a hit. You know, it's funny. It is in like a, it's funny how these things work. I'm sure your podcast is the same way. It's like in all these countries. You're like, who's listening to that? How did it end up in Slovenia? And where is Slovenia?
It's shocking to me that more than 5 people listen to my podcast too. And it's sort of like, you hope that the word of mouth will spread it, right? Mm-hmm. Eventually, or that someone will stumble on it. And right. I think with yours in particular, because of the subject matter and how specific it is and how less of a pool of these podcasts there are, you know, I'm doing fantasy football. There's a billion fantasy football podcasts, right? So it's hard to stand out in that space.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I feel like for yours, it's like, you know, if someone's searching for the right name or the right movie, like they're going to fall into this, you know, just by SEO almost.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like it's a different take too, because I love podcasts about film and television, but oftentimes they're just either they're walking you through scene by scene or they're interpreting the material, whatever it may be. Mine is more like what I do at home. I'm just going to go down the rabbit hole. Like this actor, what else was he? And oh my God, he was also in this and it connects. And that's, so I kind of go down that. And like we were just talking about earlier before we started the show, I'm really interested in like the obscure, the forgotten, the, oh my God, I can't believe this happened and no one remembers it. And, so which is what we're doing. So this season 2, is about films that were made into TV shows. And again, it's been done well multiple times. But I want to focus on the, what the fuck were they thinking? like, what is this? You know what I mean? And so today I'm going to start with a classic, the 1986 movie, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Great movie. Great movie. I know you've seen it, correct?
I have seen it. After the fact, I was 1 year old whenever it came out, so I can't.
Oh wow!
I can't speak to seeing it. Did not see it in theaters.
No, nor did I. No, I was. I would have been approaching 10 when it came out. So no, I didn't see it in theater either. It's a classic. So as you know, we have to read the synopsis. A high school wise guy is determined to have a day off from school, despite what the principal thinks of that. So, and I could talk about this movie forever, but that's not what we're going to talk about. We're going to focus on the show. But the movie, you know, had a great cast. We're going to focus on the primary characters, which is Ferris Bueller, played by Matthew Broderick. Cameron Fry, played by Alan Ruck. I love Alan Ruck.
Yep.
Sloane Peterson, Mia Sara.
Meow.
Yeah, for real, man. Even the name, Sloane Peterson.
Sloane Peterson's a sexy hot name anyway. Yeah.
Ed Rooney, played by Jeffrey Jones. And Jeannie Bueller, played by Jennifer Grey. The movie is written and directed by John Hughes.
Yep.
Yeah. Interesting trivia. So the idea for a sequel had been floating around like, so first, actually, before we get into that, everyone wanted this movie. So, it landed with Matthew Broderick, but Robert Downey Jr. was heavy but I feel like it would have been a darker film with him.
Yeah.
Like his first relationship, because he's very innocent on the one hand. Like you'd be scared of him if you were his teacher, but you'd let him date your daughter. It's a very interesting dynamic with this kid, right?
Yeah.
A good kid, but really mischievous, you know? And I think with Robert Downey Jr. it would have been too dark. Another one in the running for it was John Cryer. At the time, he was Pretty in Pink. He went on to 2 and a Half Men. But with him, it's too nerdy, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like that kid's kind of a wimp and I don't know. And you don't see him pulling off sick stuff, you know, that driving a Ferrari. So everyone wanted this movie. So interesting trivia. The idea for a sequel had been floating around for years. They talked about Ferris in college. They talked about Ferris as a grown up at work. It was Matthew Broderick that shot it down, saying that the film didn't need a sequel. It was about a specific time and place and it didn't need updating, right? They didn't listen to him. They probably should have, because in 1990, on NBC, Ferris Bueller, the TV show, debuted and it bombed. So let's go into the Ferris Bueller, because again, this isn't about the movie. We're going to focus on the show. I bet there's a million podcasts about the movie.
Can I just say, in my opinion, the sequel to this is basically Van Wilder. That's basically Ferris Bueller in college. Don't you think there's like a lot of similarity between the characters there, where it's like,
sure,
he's a little mischievous, but not in like a stealing things, like criminal kind of a way.
Right.
But he's also like a real smooth talking, but he also has like surprisingly good heart at times.
So let's walk through this. If Ferris Bueller goes to college, does he do well and finish in 4 years, or is he like Van Wilder? Because wasn't Van Wilder in college
7 years?
Yeah. 7 years, right?
I expected that Ferris Bueller became the head of a major corporation. I expected that he was CEO material.
But I could see Van Wilder being that as well.
Absolutely.
You know, totally so agree. I think you're right. You're right. I also think TV world-wise, and I mentioned this in the season one finale of Fanacek. I love how it gets a reference to the season one and season two. Yeah. But Parker Lewis Can't Lose, which was a TV show in the 90s, I felt like that was kind of a different version of Ferris as well. Kid in high school, breaks the fourth wall, kind of runs the show. Again, you know, not a good kid per se, but you'd let him date your daughter.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I think you're right. Van Wilder, yeah. That's
kind of
a good point.
Vibe, yeah.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see how Ferris Bueller does in college. Anyway, so that's a strong point. So the TV show debuted, let's take a look here. I lost where I was. Okay, so 1998 debuts. Let's read the synopsis. Because it's kind of interesting the take they did on this. So based on the popular feature film, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a half-hour situation comedy. It follows the high school adventures of Ferris Bueller and his friend. So it keeps it in high school. But here's what they did that was interesting. And I don't know if it's a good choice or not. But basically, I can't explain it too well. The movie exists in the TV show. So in the movie, the TV show, he's the real Ferris Bueller's Day Off, or Ferris Bueller. And he's referencing the movie that they made about him starring Matthew Broderick.
Oh boy.
Right? Okay. So it exists in the same universe.
Okay.
So
gotcha.
Yeah. So, and I'll read about that. So the cast was, and we're going to go through them one by one. Charlie Schlatter played Ferris Bueller. Brandon Douglas played Cameron Frye. Amy Dolenz played Sloane Peterson. Ed Rooney was played by an actor named Richard Reel. And of course, Jeannie Bueller, played by then unknown Jennifer Aniston.
Ooh.
So, and I think if Jennifer Aniston doesn't do this show, we're not talking about it. I don't think anyone would remember it.
Wow. Okay.
And here's how you know it's going to suck, right? For a million reasons. But John Hughes was not involved at all. He didn't want to be involved at all. And at that point, you got to say to yourself, okay, let's pump the brakes on this. If the creator of this, and other great movies, by the way.
A lot of them.
Too many to talk about.
Yeah.
If he wants no involvement with
it.
He
wants no part in this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not good.
Usually a sign that you're heading the wrong direction.
Yeah. You hire talented people and you let them be talented. You don't hire the talented guy, then cut him out of it and move on. You know, it's just not, And it was proven bad. So I did make a note to myself to read some stuff here from the Wikipedia, which will further explain what I said. So here we go. So though based on the film, the series was not a canon continuation. Rather, it was set up to portray itself as being the real life situations upon which the film was loosely based. Right? So it exists in that world. In the pilot episode, Ferris refers to the film and expresses his displeasure at Matthew Broderick portraying him, even going so far as destroying a life-size cardboard cutout of Matthew Broderick with a chainsaw. However, no future references to the film ended up happening within the show's continuity. So they addressed it in the pilot episode and go from there. And he destroys a cardboard
cutout.
That's it. Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. So let's. You know what I want to do? I wasn't really prepared to do this, but I mean, to get a better feel for the show, what I'd like to do is let's like read a couple of synopsises of it. So I'm going to go through some of the episodes, of which there were only 13. So let's read the pilot. The first day of Ferris Bueller's junior year at Ocean Bay High School. That's the other thing. They moved it from Chicago to California.
Wait, and it's
So it's really
it's the time of life that led up to the movie being created.
Yes,
because he was like I thought he was a senior in the movie because they're talking about college, right?
Yeah, I think you might be right. So I guess this is this is what the movie was based on.
Okay.
So and again, the movie was of course Chicago. All John Hughes films are Illinois.
Yeah.
This took place in California.
Okay.
He has some old issues to deal with, such as his arch nemesis Principal Rooney. That will have to wait as he has the new issue of a beautiful transfer student named Sloane. So this is him just meeting Sloane.
Okay. Okay.
Huh. Interesting. Let's see what episode 2 is about. Behind every dirtbag. So, Principal Rooney handpicks a candidate for student body president and prohibits Ferris from running. Ferris does the next best thing and prepares his own candidate. His choice is a boy named Shred, who dislikes Principal Rooney as much as he does. I gotta see who plays Shred. I'm scrolling.
That's such an early 90s name, too.
It's Shred. A guy named Matthew Walker, who I don't know, but here's his headshot. He's like a weird clown. So, I don't know.
That's the first picture that comes up when you.
That's it. Yeah, literally.
IMDb
that
guy.
If you look at it, yeah,
great.
That's him right there.
Yeah.
All right. So what I want to do is we're going to break down the casting of each character. So let's start with Ferris himself. So it's Charlie Schlatter plays Ferris. I'll pull him up for you so you can see what he looks like. He's older now. Let me find you a young picture of this guy, Charlie Schlatter. Okay. This is him, and this is the cast. So that's Charlie Schlatter, blonde hair, good looking kid. I mean, not bad.
Sure.
So we're going to dive into his career a little bit. So he had 136 acting credits. The first one is Bright Lights, Big City, 1988. Great movie. We're going to talk about that. The most recent one is 7 episodes of The Loud House. He does various voices. Now, do you guys watch The Loud House at home? No. Oh, in the Loud. It's a kid show. Oh, it's a cartoon. It may be a little bit past its prime, so maybe your kids are a little too young. They may have just missed it.
Okay.
My oldest was really into it. Oh, we didn't ask your name. What's your name for the
episode? My name, of course, is Billy Mack from the legendary Love Actually.
Billy Mack. Yes.
Yep.
He was the aging musician, correct?
The aging musician, that's right.
Love it. Billy Mack. How do we forget to do that? Sorry. All right. Well, welcome back to Show Billy Mack. I'm Fanacek. All right. Glad we did that way out of order. So let's dive in. So again, his first movie was Bright Lights, Big City. Last one, most recent thing, he does a lot of the voices on Loud House, which is kind of a theme in his career. Have you ever seen the movie Bright Lights, Big City?
No.
It was supposed to be a big deal. I vaguely remember it. So it came out in 88. So I was about 12 or going on 12. It was supposed to be like a really big deal, and it just didn't quite hit. It was like a really dark, gritty movie. And here's, I'll read the synopsis and I'll kind of point out to you why it probably didn't work. It was based on a popular novel. A disillusioned young writer living in New York City turns to drugs and drinking to block out the memories of his dead mother and estranged wife. All right. And that writer was played by Michael J. Fox.
Oh.
You know, and I just don't.
Yeah.
And I don't want to take anything away from Michael J. Fox. I love Michael J. Fox.
He's an American treasure.
Sure. And he's Marty McFly. But like, for example, he also did a Vietnam movie with Sean Penn called Casualties of War. And it doesn't quite work because do you see Michael J. Fox in Vietnam?
No. Yeah. It's not the right. Yeah.
It just doesn't work. Anyway, but the movie had a great cast. So Bright Lights, Big City's Michael J. Fox. His co-stars Kiefer Sutherland. Also had Phoebe Cates, the great Phoebe Cates from Fast Times Ridgemont High. By the way, that was made into a TV show that we'll talk about at some point. Swoozie Kurtz was in this. Tracy Pollan was in it. Tracy Pollan is who Michael J. Fox eventually married, still married to her. Diane Wiest, William Hickey. William Hickey is an actor you will know. William Hickey was the old grandfather, the old senile one in Christmas Vacation, who eventually, I think he burns the Christmas tree down to the ground.
Yeah,
the old guy talks like this. He's got Bethany, the bad wig.
Oh my gosh. Why can't I not think of his name right now?
Yeah, I can't think of the guy's name. He's always smoking his stogie.
I'm going to get my stogie.
Stogie.
You're not doing anything constructive.
Yep.
Uncle Lewis.
Yes, so Uncle that's Lewis. William Hickey. He's also in a great movie called, if you ever get a chance, a really good detective movie called Sea of Love. And it was kind of considered Pacino's comeback. So Pacino's early 80s were pretty bad. And then 1985, he did a movie called, I don't remember what it's called. It was about the American Revolution. It was actually called Revolution. So there you go. And again, I don't see Pacino playing an American revolutionary guy. Just like I don't see Michael J. Fox playing a drug-addled writer.
Yeah.
But anyway, so he kind of went away for one. Then 1989, this movie comes out called Sea of Love. And it just kind of brought Pacino back. Great cop movie. But his dad in the movie, who's like, his health is failing, is William Hickey. So I always think of William Hickey as that.
Okay.
That was a tangent. And also in his fourth acting credit in Bright Lights, Big City is David Hyde Pierce. He was Fraser Crane's brother in Frasier.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So now again, so I want to talk about Charlie Schlatter because this is interesting. And as a former actor, I find this very interesting. Again, his first movie is in 1988. By 1990, this guy's the lead in an NBC sitcom. 2 years it took him. I mean, that's insane. So again, first movie, 1988. Later that same year, he's the lead in another major motion picture, 18 again, with George Burns. So in 1988, this guy's like a small role in a big movie, but then he's the lead in a movie with George Burns. I'm like, who is this guy's agent?
Yeah. Well, I don't know this to be true or not, but there seemed to be like a subset of like the teenage and early 20s actors that run in a similar circle, in part because John Hughes did so many of those movies, right? But I wonder if there's, not to say that there was any limit on talent by any stretch, but I don't know, you get connected with the right person and the right couple of people, especially 40 years ago, and I'm sure it...
Yeah.
You just, opportunity and boom.
That's it. They're almost like forced on you. You know who I felt like was that for Ari in the 90s? I felt like Chris O'Donnell was that guy. Why was Chris O'Donnell in everything? Like, I feel like...
He was Robin one time, wasn't he?
That was awful.
Yeah.
And I have nothing against Chris O'Donnell, but I don't think he can do a push-up. Much less be a damn superhero, right? He's soft. He's handsome and he's not a bad actor, but he's a soft guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's not Robin. But I feel like he was in every damn movie. They were really shoving Chris O'Donnell down until we were like, enough. And now he kind of faded off and he's in NCIS whatever or CSI whatever.
What you find out later is like... Those types of characters have like a rich uncle who's like a big time producer somewhere that you'd be like, oh, that's why Chris O'Donnell's on every movie right now.
It's funny that you say that because at the end of this podcast, we're going to talk about some actors who have that same situation. Okay. So that's going to come back because you're absolutely right. So in 1988, he's 18 again with George Burns, which was George Burns' final role, actually. And the synopsis, there were a million movies just like this in the 80s. So an aging, ruthless businessman swaps bodies with his grandson in the wake of getting into a car accident. And we saw a ton of these. There was Like Father, Like Son, with Kirk Cameron and was that Dudley Moore? Or, I don't know. They dream a little dream with Corey Feldman. He swaps bodies with Jason Robards. Like the 80s loved swapping bodies. They
did love swapping bodies. That's true.
Then there was even the Lindsay Lohan did it. Yep. Much later, but Freaky Friday, which based on an older movie, Freaky Friday, but
yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, so 18 again stars Charlie Schlatter, George Burns, Red Buttons, Pauly Shore was in this.
Oh, really?
So I've been on TV several times, right? Again, love to make the podcast about me, right? My very first time I was ever on TV, I was 14 years old, and it was with Pauly Shore.
Really?
So totally Pauly. So that's how I got cable. So this is a story of how Fanacek got cable. So I'm in eighth grade, and it's November, late November, because they're taking us on a Christmas trip to go ice skating in Central Park, Woolman Rink, which Trump actually, I think, bought and restored and all that. Because it was Woolman Rink. Now I'm pretty sure the name Trump is slapped on it.
Somewhere. Make it great again.
Yeah. But so eighth grade, they take us ice skating in Central Park. And while we're there, MTV shows up to film an episode of the show Totally Pauly. So he had a half hour show where he'd do little bullshit things, you know, the weasel, all that shit. And then he'd introduce videos. I don't know who he is because I don't have cable. But what they need, there's some of the producers come over to me like, hey, we need a couple kids who can ice skate. I grew up playing hockey. So like, we need a couple kids who can ice skate. Would you mind doing a bit with Pauly Shore? I'm like, yeah, I'm all in. So the bit is he's flailing around because he's faking like he can't skate very well. And I have to skate circles around him going, you suck, Pauly, that kind of thing. So I'm so excited. So I go home like, we have to get cable because in a few weeks, this is going to come out.
I'm going to be on TV.
So we bit the bullet. We got cable. And sure enough, aired sometime in December. I was on Totally Pauly. And I'll never forget. I was so stoked, too, because the video he introduced was my favorite song at the time. It was from Young Guns 2. It was Blaze of Glory. John Bon Jovi's Blaze of Glory. So I'm like, I'm on MTV, and they introduced Blaze of Glory.
Song, is this what spawned your acting, your desire to be an actor? Is this what it did? Taste of it?
It might have been. It might have been. And I just, you know, what was funny is that I wasn't starstruck because I didn't even know the show. But what I loved was that everyone else thought it was so cool.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, that was so amazing. You know,
you're like, oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. And I will say, because I always have to give an opinion, we did get to spend some time with him, you know, in between. And he was a very friendly guy.
Yeah.
Very nice. I remember he was one of those guys, he shakes your hand with both hands. He does that. He's like, thank you so much. Thank you so much.
He's like your grandma? Like a...
And then he touched me inappropriately.
Yeah, and then he gave me some butterscotch.
Yeah. He had a tissue rolled up in his sleeve.
Covered, plastic covered couch. We watched Murder, She Wrote for a while.
Yes, it's exactly. But no, he was a very friendly guy.
What was the movie that he did? I'm sorry. I'm waylaying us here.
What
was the movie that he did? I watched it so many times. It was like he was dating some girls like from a farm.
Oh, that's Son-in-Law.
Son-in-Law. Yes.
Great movie.
Yes.
It's with Carla Cugino.
When I was growing up, we loved that movie.
Carla and the great Tiffany Amber Thiessen's in that, isn't she? She's the girl who, she's the bad girl in it, you know, who then. Yeah. Yeah, she's a goat, greatest of all time.
She is a goat.
I sat, and I've never mentioned this before on this show. I sat in front of her at a concert once. So I was at a Bare Naked Ladies concert in Santa Monica. They were doing a Christmas concert. They did like a Christmas tour. They had a Christmas album come out. And I'm a big Bare Naked Ladies fan.
Sure.
And so I had like third row, I had great seats, and she was like one or two rows behind me. And I was like, oh my God, that's her. So the band would come out and talk to everyone. And I'd met the band member several times. So I went over to talk to the bass player. And while I was talking to him, his name is Jim Cregan, she came over to talk to him. So I didn't talk, I'm not going to lie, I said I talked to her, but I was like right there. So I'm talking to him, she's talking to him. I'm like beside myself, like, this is Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Oh my God. And I had better seats than her.
The better seat would be behind her, not to your back to her, but did you just immediately remove yourself from that situation whenever she came to talk to the bass player? You know what? I'm going to let you guys chat.
I
don't belong here.
Yeah, well, it was one of those...
He's trying to get some game there.
It was one of the... Well, he was married, actually. I think he was holding his baby.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure. Because Jim Cregan, the band's Canadian, but I think at the time he actually lived in Santa Monica.
Okay.
So, because I remember for him, it was like an easy commute. I don't think he was touring with the band. I think he lived there. But it's actually a funny story about him in all the 90210 world. So when I first moved to LA, when I first moved to California, I was living in Ventura County, which is a city called Oxnard. Sucks. But it's about 50 miles north of LA. So I get there and the first friend I made was a guy named Chris, and there was Bare Naked Ladies, the bass player Jim Cregan was in a side band called the Brothers Cregan. It was him and his brother Andy had a band. Andy was an original member of Bare Naked Ladies, but had left. So they were playing a little show in a dive bar, and I forget what it's called. It's in LA, Molly Malone's, Molly Maguire's, something to that effect. And they have a basement where they have live music. So I get there, and I'm not kidding, man, there's like four people in this place. And so I see him. He's hanging out with some people. I see him. So I go over there. And my buddy Chris is like, you should go talk to him. I'm like, yeah, there's no one. It's funny how, to me, this guy's a rock star. And he's in this bar. And no one even knows who he is. No one, I mean, literally, maybe 11 people showed up to see the band. I was, of course, early. So I go over to talk to him. And he couldn't be friendly. He turns and he's like, oh, thanks for coming. And he introduces me to his friends. There's this guy and this guy. And that's Jason. Yeah, that's Jason Priestley. And I was like, oh my God, this is my first night in Los Angeles. My first, because you got to remember, I'm living up in Oxnard.
Yeah.
My first in LA was I drove down there to go to this Molly Malone's, Molly Maguire's, whatever it was. And I mean, I'm in shock. I'm like, Jim Cregan just introduced me to Jason Priestley, which makes sense. Jason Priestley directed a great documentary about the band called Bare Naked in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. It's a great documentary. It came out like in 98, directed by Jason Priestley. So he's a big fan of theirs. So it makes sense that if they're in LA,
Did you just think that's how LA was going to be for you?
I really did.
This is going to be amazing.
And even before that. Okay, so now, yes, I had a great introduction to LA. Horrible leaving. But when I got there, I was like, this place is amazing. So I'll go even before that. So when I first moved to Oxnard, I was working, at a Navy base called Point Magoo, which is literally right above Malibu on this PCH. You see it all the time, beautiful Pacific Coast Highway.
Yeah.
So on one of my first days off, I'm like, I'm going to go see this Malibu, you know? So I get in my car and I drive down PCH. I'm in Malibu. I remember seeing Neptune's Net, and there's been a bunch of movies filmed there. And I go into, there's like a Gelson's, I think, it's some kind of fancy grocery store, and there's a Starbucks there. So I go into the Starbucks, and it relates to this podcast. This is nuts. So I go into the Starbucks. You know who else is in there? Jennifer Aniston. I called my mom. I called my mom this is amazing. This is my first, like, okay, I'm settled, I have an apartment, let me go see some stuff. I'm like, this is amazing. So now my first time in Malibu, I see Jennifer Aniston in Starbucks. My first night in LA, Jim Cregan introduced me to Jason Priestley. I'm telling you, I got a bunch of stories like this. It was wild, you know?
That's insane.
Yeah, I did not talk to her though. I remember specifically calling my mother.
And I know what she ordered, and I've ordered it every day since.
Then the cops came, and it was the whole thing. Apparently you can't hug Jennifer Aniston. Unless she's okay with
an erection. That's the frowned upon.
I hate women who are like that. Yeah. Like, don't hug me unless it's okay. No, but so that's, well, we went off on a tangent, but yes. So anyway, more about 18 again. Pauly Shore, Twilight Zone. Earl Bowen was in that. You know who Earl Bowen is? Are you a Terminator guy? Any of those movies?
I'm a new Terminator wannabe fan.
Got it. I love Terminator, Terminator 2. There's a recurring character in all of those, besides this Terminator. The psychiatrist is always in it.
Okay.
And it's Earl Bowen. Okay. And that's the only way I know him. And then Toni Sawyer was in it. She was Arnold Schwarzenegger's partner in Kindergarten Cop.
Okay.
It's not a tumor. Ah! Anyway. Okay.
Very good.
So there's that. So let's move on. So from here, though, it becomes a very odd career. Because look, again, this guy's first movie is 1988. Later that year, he's a lead in a movie with George Burns. We know 2 years later, he's a lead in a sitcom on NBC. I mean, like, this guy, he's just on fire. It gets a little weird, though. So he starts off hot in 88. His third movie in 88 is Heartbreak Hotel. He's the third lead in that behind David Keith, who is from An Officer and a Gentleman. Great movie with Richard Gere. Also, Tuesday Weld is in it. Tuesday Weld was a Nick and Knight actress. She was in all those old shows and then had a great career when she was older. She's in a great movie called Thief, directed by Michael Mann, and it's her and James Caan. A great, great movie. 1989, he does The Delinquent. So this is all leading up to Ferris. So in 1989, he does The Delinquent. He's one of two leads with Kylie Minogue, which makes sense because it was an Australian movie. She's an Australian star. 1990, he's the lead in Ferris Bueller, an NBC sitcom. Then it goes away. So it peaks with Ferris, right? Then this kid's done because he does a lot of straight-to-video stuff, TV movies. He does a lot of voiceover work, still does, like The Loud House we mentioned. 1994, he's the ninth lead, because I counted it, the ninth lead in Police Academy, Mission to Moscow.
Oh, no.
Did you know there was a Police Academy?
No, I did not.
I was not aware either, sir. So David Spade has a great joke. He's in one of his first movie is one of the Police Academy movies. I don't know which one. And he always mentions, you know, the good one. I think they all sucked. Maybe the first one was good, but I always love David Spade. He's always like, you know, it was a good one. He had a peak in 2000. He did an episode of one of my favorite shows, The Sopranos, in season 2. I don't remember him though. I remember the episode clearly. It's an episode where Tony's lawyer basically tells him, you got it, back up. You have to start going to work, show up at the office every day because the cops are really, like, that, things were really coming down. And the lawyer's like, look, this is what you're paying me for. You can't go to the strip club or you got to do this. And he has this itch. He's got stress. So he's got this rash that keeps coming up. And I think this guy played one of the doctors. I don't really recall. Okay. But eventually he does land. He gets consistent work. So he landed on a show called Diagnosis Murder with Dick Van Dyke. I'll read the synopsis. Dr. Mark Sloan has a knack for getting into trouble, negotiating the twists and turns of mysteries and solving crimes with the help of his son, Steve, a homicide detective. So the lead in that was Dick Van Dyke, who's still alive, shockingly, and still working.
Yeah.
My gosh.
Of course, he's both of those things.
Yeah. Anyway, and so he was like one of the leads in that. And the show itself ran, did I write it down? Ran a lot of episodes. It ran 178 episodes. And I think he did like 137 of them. So he was a series regular. Since then, it's mostly kids' stuff, video games, voiceover work. So it's all down here. So let's talk about it. Let's vote. Are we Matthew Broderick or Charlie Schlatter?
I'm going Broderick on that one.
Yeah, I think that one's easy. Perfect. I think that's an easy one.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, Charlie Schlatter, you lose, sir, to Matthew Broderick. Okay.
0-1.
0-1. On to Cameron Frye in the movie played by the great Alan Ruck.
I love Alan Ruck.
He's on TV now. He's on Succession.
He is Succession. He's great in that.
He's the oldest son.
I loved him and first saw him in Spin City.
Oh, yeah.
The TV show, which sure. I used to love as a kid in the 90s. That also had Michael J. Fox.
That's right. And you know what else he was in?
Heather Locklear was in it.
That's right. And then Michael J. Fox was replaced by Charlie Sheen, I think, right?
Yep.
I think that's when he retired from acting.
Yep.
Charlie Sheen came in and did it. But you know what else is funny? Alan Ruck was also in something else I mentioned earlier, Young Guns 2. He was in Young Guns 2. He played like a farmer that Billy the Kid kind of recruits to be in his gang.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And he was also in Speed. You always forget he's in Speed, but he's on the bus.
Oh, really?
He's one of the guys. He's the tourist who's like annoying.
Okay.
He's got his camera out.
Oh, that's right.
Ready,
that's right.
Right? Yeah.
That's right.
So, in the show, it was played by a guy named Brandon Douglas. Interesting casting. I'm going to show you a picture of him. I thought I was going to show you a picture of him. I apologize.
I already don't like him.
Well,
I mean, you're trying to compare to Alan Ruck.
Right. Come on. Here's his look. Kind of nondescript. I don't know. Yeah.
It's not like the worst look comparatively, you know?
Well, what I don't like about it is that this one I think would be the easiest one to cast because, like, okay, like Ferris Bueller, you're going to have to find someone who's charming and handsome. And you may not hit it out of the park, but there's a lot you can find charming and handsome. I think with this one, it's easier to cast because all you really need is quirky. It doesn't have to be Alan Ruck kind of quirky, but he has to be a quirky friend.
Any kind of quirky.
Right. Yeah. And they got seemingly a straight man. I don't know. He doesn't look quirky at all to me. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that, I don't like the casting at all. So let's talk about him. 39 acting credits. His first one was in 1985, a movie called Papa Was a Preacher. His latest one is 2014, Dr. Quinn, Morphine Woman. And yes, we are going to look into that later because I can't just pass that up. I gotta take a gander at that. So anyway, let's look at Papa Was a Preacher. 1985, a minister, his wife, and their large family are moved from Dallas to a needy rural church in 1950s Texas. Sounds like a snore fest. However, the lead in it, the old preacher guy, is Robert Pine. Robert Pine is Chris Pine's dad. This guy was in everything. Like, this is a total Fanichek kind of actor. So I'm going to read you, like, he's got 235 acting credits. Here's just some of his notable roles. Lost in Space, which will come up later. Death Valley Days, The Virginian with Clue Gulier. Wild Wild West, Bonanza, Mannix, Mod Squad, Gunsmoke, Cannon, Charlie's Angels, The Love Boat, Chips, Family Ties. Can you imagine if this guy was my dad?
Oh my gosh.
I'd love it.
Yeah.
He goes on in the 80s, Knight Rider, Alf, Family Ties, Good Morning, Miss Bliss. That's the show that became Saved by the Bell.
Right? That's right.
MacGyver, Quantum Leap, 90210, JAG. That's how I got my SAG card. The Office. He played Jim Halpert's dad in The Office. So I'm guessing in The Wedding when he marries Pam. Is that when we see Jim's dad?
Yep. Must be.
Right? Yeah. Yep. So he's Jim Halpert's dad. The list goes on and on. But that's, you know, and again, you talk about people have a head start in life. Nothing against Chris Pine. But man, when that's your dad.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure getting.
I wasn't on Route 66, but that's a lot of great shows.
that was just touching on him. So Papa Was a Preacher also featured Georgia Engel. She was in Everybody Loves Raymond. I think she was Deborah's mom. She was one of the in-laws, I believe. Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap and Melora Hardin, who was Jan Levinson Gould.
Oh, okay.
Levinson Gould, I presume?
She was the one who's supposed to be in Back to the Future.
Correct.
You said, right?
Correct. Yeah. Too tall. And she was the star of Dirty Dancing, the TV show, which we'll talk about later on Fanichek in another episode. Yes. So other notable roles for fake Cameron, Brandon Douglas. 1986 TV movie, Children of Times Square. We're only going to read this because it comes up later. So it's all connected on this podcast. So Children of Times Square, what is that, 1986 movie? An alienated teenage boy runs away from home and ventures to New York City, where he falls in with a gang of juvenile delinquents working as drug dealers and pickpockets for a shady crime boss. Anyway, so I did that. But that comes up later. Anyone famous in that? Not really. Joanna Cassidy, I guess, is about the only one I recognize. Couple other at Brandon Douglas, who's our fake Cameron. A 1986 is a Silver Spoon, so again, leading up to 1990. 1988 does that movie For Keeps with Molly Ringwald. That was actually a good movie. She plays a teenager who gets pregnant. It's a story of like they have the kid, and I think they end up getting married, but it's a good movie. I remember really liking that movie. He did two episodes of 21 Jump Street. That was one of my favorite shows as a kid.
Yep.
Yeah, you missed that, right? You missed
it. I missed the show. Yeah. I saw the movies with Jonah Hill and Channing Tatum.
Yeah, I was very upset. I mean, you don't even understand how much I loved that show. Yeah. I wanted to be Tom Hansen so bad. Tom Hansen was Johnny Depp's character.
Yeah.
I mean, embarrassingly bad. Like, stories I'll never tell you. it was bad. Anyway, he did Just the Ten of Us. Just the Ten of Us. I don't know if you know that show. It was a spinoff of Growing Pains.
Okay.
And it was about this guy with 10 kids, most of them girls. But, like, the two oldest girls are twins. They're super hot. He gets a job as, like, a coach and a teacher at this Christian school. And his two oldest daughters are, you know, hot and all the boys want them. And anyway, but it was a stupid sitcom, spinoff of Growing Pains. After that, though, so it gets Ferris Bueller in 1990. And again, just like our other guy, Charlie Schlatter, things kind of go downhill. 1996, an episode of Coach with Craig T. Nelson. That's a good show.
I liked Coach.
That's a strong show.
A lot growing up, yeah.
It was a good show. 92 and 0, he did four episodes of that. 93 and 94, he lands Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. So that's where he landed. So Charlie Schlatter landed at Diagnosis Murder. This guy lands at Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman. He did 38 episodes of that between 96 and 98. 2005, did an episode of Commander in Chief. Which I'm going to talk about that. I got a story about this one too. It's another Making It About Me Vaynerchuk story.
All right.
So in 2005, around this time, this is when that show is out. It's a Commander in Chief is a show about the president. It's played by Gina Davis. So okay. She's the president.
Okay.
The only reason I know it is I was in a bad movie that I'm not going to mention, but it had a screening on some film studio, on a studio, a smaller studio. I don't remember which one. I have no clue, but it wasn't like Paramount or Warner or anything like that. It was some small studio. But I remember they had something called the Charlie Chaplin Theater, and that's where we screened the movie. And actually, that theater is featured in two episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is funny. But so we screened the movie there. And afterwards, we're walking around, you know, walking out to our car. But you're allowed to roam around these studios. And you know me, I'm very nosy and I'm poking around. So me and my buddy, I'm like, well, let's just poke around. Let's go walk. And we literally, I'm just weaving through some you know, parking lot. And I next to a building, there's a door kind of ajar. I open it. And I'm not kidding, dude. I'm in the Oval Office. I'm like, what the hell is this? And the only reason I was Commander-in-Chief is because on the prop pictures was a picture of Gina Davis.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, it's that show, which I wasn't watching. I was like, it's that Gina Davis show. Yeah. Like, I'm in, no one's around me. Me and my buddy are in the Oval Office. Why I didn't steal something, I don't know. How do I not take that
get
picture?
Get some pictures with your feet up on the desk?
And
come
this
on.
Is, and again, well, this is pre-smartphone. I mean, this is just, sure. And I, you know, so this is before that. You know, I didn't have one anyway until way years later.
Around your neck or anything?
Yeah, man. So, but I've been in, that's the only thing I know about that show was I was in that Oval Office. And then, of course, you got freaked out. You know, if there's security guards around. But I was standing in the Oval Office. But, I mean, that's probably the closest I'll ever be to the real Oval Office, I think. I mean, it was so bizarre.
I think it counts.
You know what? I'm just going to, over the years, that story will change. So I was in the
Oval Office. And honestly, Gina Davis could run for president.
Yeah, sure. She couldn't do any worse. But remember Dr. Quinn, Morphine Woman? So I did look that up.
Yeah, for sure.
What that ended up being, and we don't have to talk much about it. It was a 2014 short film. It was made for Funny or Die.
So
she, I guess in it, she gets everyone hooked on drugs, I guess morphine, and she becomes a big drug lord. And so that's that. So that's Brandon Douglas. Brandon Douglas versus Alan Ruck. I think I'm going Alan Ruck.
That's an easy win for Alan Ruck.
And that would have been, I think, the easiest casting because any other character, just get a type. This one just had to be quirky. And there's a million quirky actors.
There's a lot of movies with that quirky best friend character.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, like, I don't know. I just don't get that at all. Sloane Peterson. So Sloane Peterson played by Mia Sara, but TV version was Amy Dolenz. Now I know the name Amy Dolenz. She kind of became a star. So she is the daughter of Mickey Dolenz. He was in the Monkees. Okay. So he was in the Monkees. He played drums, but also sang most of their songs. There's this misconception that Davy Jones was a singer, but really when you listen to her music, it's mostly Mickey Dolenz. He might be one of the only ones still alive. I think Mickey Dolenz is still alive. Anyway, but she had a lot of fun trivia, so I wrote it all down. So fact number one is a good friend of Weird Al Yankovic. She toured with him, and he pretended to saw her in half during Like a Surgeon.
Okay.
Alice Cooper was her childhood neighbor. I thought that was interesting. Alice Cooper is, do you know who that is? Like, you know the look. Oh, what I love about him is his persona is black leather, eyeliner, killing, kind of like an American Ozzy Osbourne.
Yeah.
But he's such a Woody Allen-ish kind of nebbish guy. And he's very conservative. He's a great golfer. Apparently he's an amazing golfer. Mm-hmm. So he's nothing like that persona. I never forget, I was watching some documentary. And I think it was about Poison or bands of that ilk. And one of the recurring themes was all these divorces, you know. And this guy's like, oh yeah, I got divorced. Another guy, I got divorced. And it cuts to Alice Cooper, who's been married like for like 50 years. And he's like, it's like no context. So they just literally cut to him. And he's like, well, you keep marrying strippers. What do you think's gonna happen? I loved it. Like it was just that was his take on it. You know, keep marrying strippers, you're gonna get divorced. What else? When she was born in 1969, magazines and newspapers called her Monkey Baby because her dad was a monkey. I just love it. So that was her nickname, Monkey Baby. She turned down the audition for Buffy in the Buffy TV show. She turned that down. She later regretted it. Yeah, no shit, because no one knows who you are now. So I bet you do regret it, you know?
Wasn't that Sarah Michelle Gellar?
It was.
Yeah.
Sarah Michelle Gellar. I never saw the show. I know the movie. I didn't really love the movie that much. We talked about my last podcast.
The show was... Yeah, I remember, mm-hmm. I remember hearing that. The show was big when I was of age to have watched it. I didn't watch it.
Yeah, it was a huge deal.
I knew her more from Cruel Intentions. That's where I was...
Great movie. That's a winner. Yeah, I love that movie. That's the movie where Reese Witherspoon met Ryan Phillippe.
That was
Dangerous Liaisons, right? That was like a remake of Dangerous, like a modernization of Dangerous Liaisons. Yeah.
I'll take your word for it.
Very good movie. So Amy Dolenz has 47 acting credits. Her first one is The Children of Times Square, which we talked about earlier. That's the only reason I read that synopsis earlier.
Okay.
So I knew that was going to come back. So she apparently worked with our fake Cameron for a little bit. Her last was 2010 short film called Committed. Nothing interesting there. So I read on it. Nothing there. Notable roles, though. So again, we're leading up to 1990. 85 to 86, she has two episodes of Growing Pains, mentioned earlier. I was a fan of Growing Pains, like that show. She did, 1986, she did an episode of Starman. Starman was a great movie starring Jeff Bridges and Karen Allen. Karen Allen was the female lead in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
Indiana Jones' love interest there. Real pretty.
Yeah.
But Starman was also a great movie that became a show, and I may or may not be talking about it later on in season 2 of Fanacheck. So there you go. I ended up really liking the show, but it was very odd. 1986, she did straight to video Shattered If Your Kid's on Drugs. Right. That's how I reacted as well. So we got to look that up. So Shattered If Your Kid's on Drugs. So here it is. Propaganda film to expose a series of drug relations within teenagers, and only two men who are aware of the situation can lay their insight on the epidemic that is growing. One of those two men is Burt Reynolds. The other one is Judd Nelson. Are those two fucking people that should be intervening on drug use at all? Judd Nelson's a train wreck.
That sounds like a movie that accommodates the D.A.R.E. packet that you get when your kid comes home from school and they have a VHS that you get.
Exactly what that is. Yeah. And even if saying it's a propaganda film. But I love that the two men who are going to step in are Judd Nelson and Burt Reynolds. Two people I wouldn't let in your fucking children ever. Especially Judd Nelson. What a weirdo he became. Anyway, so Burt Reynolds, Judd Nelson's in it. Dermot Mulroney's in it. It's only his fourth acting credit. I like that guy.
I like Dermot
Mulroney. She then went on to do Mr. Belvedere. She did Silver Spoons. 1987, she was... I don't remember her. She was a small role, but she did Can't Buy Me Love. That was a great movie. You don't know it? Oh, you gotta watch it. It's one of the great 80s romantic comedies. He's like... he's a nerd, cuts grass. Long story short, he's saving up all summer. He cuts grass, saves up like $1,000 to buy this telescope he really wants. But there's this girl he's in love with, like lives down the street. And the day he's there to buy the telescope, he sees her across the way in the mall. What she did was her mom was out of town, so she, without permission, took her mom's leather suit, like a two-piece suit leather thing, went to a party, spilled wine all over it. Can't get it fixed. It's going to cost her $1,000 to replace it. He sees it going down. He steps in and makes a deal with her. I'll pay for that, but you have to pretend to be my girlfriend for 2 weeks. The idea being that if she pretends to be his girlfriend for 2 weeks, it'll make him popular. Mm-hmm. And it does, and of course things go downhill. Great movie, though, if you ever get a chance to see it.
That's a good
it's a winner. Summary, at least. Yeah. It's a winner. It's actually really good. That's one of those ones, if it comes on, I happen to be around, I'm like, I'll check that out.
Yeah,
it's always good, and it features his younger brother is a very young Seth Green.
Really?
I never forget, there's a line I stole from him that I use because they're nerds, and every Friday and Saturday night they get together in the basement and play cards, and I remember Seth Green little brother's like, cards with the tards. Anyway, that always made me laugh.
Something I would have said.
Yeah.
In high school as well.
Yeah, so I've said that quite a bit. Anytime I see my friends playing cards, I have to throw that out there. Cards with the tards. 88, she does an episode of Webster. I saw him in a hotel once. I was with my buddy, who I was just visiting in Brooklyn. Yeah. The guy, last podcast guest, he and I were in L.A. once at a hotel called The Standard, which is like a real swanky hotel. Celebrities used to hang out there. So we thought we'd be cool for one night to stay in this hotel. He's visiting me out there. And as we're checking out the next morning, Emmanuel Lewis is in the lobby. And I'm trying to whisper to my buddy. I'm like, hey, it's Emmanuel Lewis. He's like, huh? I'm like, it's Emmanuel Lewis. He's like, who's Emmanuel Lewis? And I'm trying to be quiet because the guy's sitting right next to me. Yeah. And finally, I'm like shouting at him, it's fucking Webster, man. Yeah. It's Webster. And like, Emmanuel Lewis is looking over at us. Anyway, so it became a whole argument over who the hell Emmanuel Lewis is. But I did. I saw him in the lobby of a hotel. 1989, she books a big movie. So She's Out of Control. So she's the lead and She's Out of Control. I remember this because I remember the box from the video store. Mm-hmm. But the lead in that is Tony Danza. So she plays his daughter. So when an average looking teenage girl gets a makeover, it's enough to make her father become overprotective of her. So the idea is she's going nuts and, you know, she's attractive all of a sudden. Tony Danza is a dad. A weird thing for Tony Danza. He's playing a character named Doug.
So, oh, not Tony.
Yes, I don't know. Must have been a lot of, all right, cut. Tony, you're Doug.
Tony, you are Doug. That's your cue.
Hey, let's just change it to Tony.
What do you let's do? Just call Tony. What do you think? Do you
Tony Maselli. You know, Samantha. No, it's her name. No, your daughter's not Samantha in this. She's playing a character named Katie. Yeah, let's just call her Samantha.
Yeah, I call her. But I call her, affectionately call her Samantha.
Is there anyone named Mona in this movie? Mona? Anyway, so yeah, very weird. But I remember that movie being kind of a big deal. It also featured a young Matthew Perry.
Okay.
And in the same movie together, I don't know what capacity, Todd Bridges and Dustin Diamond. So Todd Bridges was Willis and Dustin Diamond was Screech.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, you don't have to be a detective to figure out this probably wasn't a great movie. The lead is Tony Danza and it also features Todd Bridges and Dustin Diamond. Hard pass. But anyway, but it was a big deal because I remember that the box, you know, everyone renting it. So in 1980, she books Ferris Bueller, right? So, I mean, a short career. And again, like a four-year rise.
Yeah.
And then, like everyone else, it goes downhill from there, right? So in 92, she does a movie called Miracle Beach. Now, I love when I get to read you like a fun synopsis. I got two in a row. This is great. Here's a synopsis of Miracle Beach, 1992 movie. A down-on-his-luck beach bum asks a cute female genie to help him seduce the woman of his dreams, only to realize that he might be looking in the wrong place. Well, if you have a genie, help me. Does it really matter where you are? Can't you just kind of... Anyway, it's wrong for a million reasons.
It's wrong for a million reasons.
But you know, it's funny. The guy, the leading, I guess the loser looking for this genie, is played by Dean Cameron. He had a kind of a decent career in the 80s. So he was in a movie that I love called Summer School. He played a character named Chainsaw. Summer School was a Mark Harmon movie. His female interest in it was... Kirstie Alley before Cheers. Yeah. And then one of the young teenage girls he's teaching, because he's basically a high school teacher who doesn't give, I think he teaches like gym, doesn't give a shit. And it's the last day of school and he's about to hop in the car with his girlfriend and go to Hawaii for the summer. And the vice principal basically grabs his, you have to teach summer school. Yep. And that's the gist of it. And the teacher in the room next door is Kirstie Alley. So he's the slacker. She's a serious teacher. Of course, he becomes a good teacher. It's all that. But one of the girls he's teaching is a young Courtney Thorne Smith. Remember her from Melrose Place? Oh, she was lights out. We're going to look her up.
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta show you her. Courtney Thorne. Yeah, she was
I either know that synopsis or it's familiar, or it's been done elsewhere, or I know the name. The name Summer School sounds familiar.
Well, this was her like circa Melrose Place, but she was in a lot of things. Nice. But yeah, she was one of my favorites growing up.
Yeah.
But that was a great movie. But anyway, he played a character named Chainsaw in it. He was kind of a standout character. But also, interestingly, another movie that should never have been made into a TV show was Fast Times Ridgemont High. And he played Spicoli in it. Imagine that. Like, have you seen Fast Times at Ridgemont High? Classic. Yeah. And clearly the best character in that is Jeff Spicoli, played by Sean Penn. Yep. Imagine getting cast in that. Yep. I'd be like, I can't
do
it. I'm sorry.
Luck.
Yeah, I'm not following him. So, but this movie also featured, Miracle Beach. Let's take a look here. Are we still talking about Miracle Beach? We are. Yikes. Okay. Also featured Alexis Arquette. Mentioned her in my last podcast. That's one of the Arquette siblings, of which there's like 9 million. Mm-hmm. Alexis was born a man, transitioned to woman. He was a dude in the bathroom in Pulp Fiction, came running out, shooting at them.
That's right.
And missed. Kind of looks like a young giant Jerry Seinfeld.
Yep.
And then later on, one of my favorites, he was in Wedding Singer, where he's like that boy George.
Yes.
You know, and then,
Give me 10.
Yeah. He's in that. And then, anyway, so that's Alexis Arquette, passed away not too long ago. I guess 3-4 years ago. Pat Morita was in this movie, Mr. Miyagi. Martin Mull. And then Vincent Schiavelli. And the reason I'm bringing him up is that Vincent Schiavelli was also in Fast Times Ridgemont High. He was the weird science teacher. But he's and he did the worst thing you can do as an actor, I think. So he's in the movie, but he's also in the TV show. That's not good.
He was the carryover.
That's not good. And we don't have a carryover in this in Ferris, but I will find some throughout season two because that's not a good thing. You want to be
a desperate move, yeah.
But an interesting thing about this, I only discovered this, maybe a year or two ago, because I love Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So Vincent Schiavelli plays the weird science teacher, and one of the funny things, the big reveal about his character at the end is we meet his wife. He was like super hot, like the super hot blonde is his wife. That was Lana Clarkson in one of her early only big roles. That's the chick that Phil Spector killed. Remember, Phil Spector was a music producer and he shot a woman in his house. He ended up going to prison for it. It was a big deal. So Phil Spector was like the major music producer. He created what's called a wall of sound. Ronnie Spector was his wife. Ronnie Spector, the Ronettes. But he produced the Beatles. He's responsible basically for Let It Be, because the Beatles recorded all that music and walked away from it. They hired Phil Spector to come in and kind of turn it into an album. But he was very eccentric. Always wore crazy wigs. Apparently a gun nut, and he killed her in his house, and anyway, went to prison for it. Yikes. But yeah, so whenever you look at that movie, that hot chick at the very end was later killed by Phil Spector. And then Dean Cain was also in Miracle Beach. So there you go. So then more bad movies and more bad movie sequels come out. So then poor Amy Dolenz goes in to do Witchboard 2. She does Pumpkinhead 2. I don't even know. 94, she's Saved by the Bell, The College Years.
Oh.
Yeah, that wasn't good. It was basically Saved by the Bell with some, you know, they threw in an ex-football player and a couple of new chicks. They brought Kelly Kapowski
there
back.
There were a few carryovers there too,
yeah. Oh, we got car alarm. Let's pause it. We good?
It's not mine.
Oh, there you go. Wow, it's just like being in Brooklyn again. What she has 94, she has Bandit. So I talk about that because Hal Needham directed that. So I did a podcast episode about Hal Needham. He's a stuntman, actor, writer, producer, and he was one of the influences for the character of Cliff Booth in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's called Bandit, and she's in that. And then it keeps getting bad. She did two Corey Haim movies at one point, so rest in peace, Corey Haim. So that's Amy Dolenz. Amy Dolenz versus Mia Sara, though. That's a conversation, because Mia Sara didn't do shit else either, I don't think.
I don't know, like, acting career, I'd have to see them both, but Mia Sara...
Yeah, let's look at her. I didn't look this up. I'm not prepared. Let's look at Mia Sara's... I'll give it a quick... She's 45 acting credits. I'll start at the beginning. Let's see what Mia Sara did. All My Children, the Ferris Bueller. Nothing I recognize. A Stranger Among Us, but other people did A Stranger Among Us. Hold on, who else was in that? Tracy Pollan was in that. We just mentioned her. She's married to Michael J. Fox. James Gandolfini was in that. Nah, I don't know, man. I think that one might be even.
That's a tough one.
She didn't do anything. I mean, at least Amy Dolenz had, like, you know, she was a lead in a damn movie. I don't know what Mia Sara ever did.
Depends on what you're comparing. Are you comparing, like, you know, their careers? Yeah. Are you comparing looks? Are you comparing how they portrayed that character?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I'm comparing. I don't know.
I'm on Team Mia. I'm sticking with Mia.
I'm going to throw that one. I'm going to throw that one to Amy Dolenz. I'm going to go to Amy Dolenz on that one.
Fair enough.
Because I also like the fact that her dad was a monkey. That's pretty cool.
She's monkey baby.
Monkey baby.
That's pretty epic.
Yeah. As offensive as that is. Yeah. She's a.
That's fair.
All right. So now we're moving on to Ed Rooney. Rooney, you're an asshole. An asshole. So there's something I want to read about this. So in the TV show or in the movie, it's played by Jeffrey Jones. Very well-known actor. And we're going to talk about him. There's some dark stuff there. However, the TV show is played by Richard Reel. And this is interesting because he's so recognizable. I'm curious to see if you recognize him. But I'll show you his face because he's one of those guys that you know you've seen him.
Yes.
He's been in a ton of stuff. You probably can't name him. I struggle naming
him. This is random. Was he in Problem Child? Do you remember those movies?
I do. I saw the first two for sure. Yeah. John Ritter. Lorraine Newman was in one of them. That little blonde hair girl joined the cast too. Let's just take a look. I'll scroll down. Those would have been late 80s, right? Early 90s?
Early 90s, yeah. Maybe not.
I'll look. So let's take a look here.
It's a little bit of a Monopoly Man look.
Yes. No, I'm not seeing Problem Child.
No Problem Child?
No. Sorry, I'm not seeing that.
I haven't seen those movies in 25 years.
So Richard Reel, very recognizable guy. He has 426 acting credits.
Oh my God.
That is Hall of Fame shit right there.
Wow.
Danny Trejo is like the only guy I can think of who had more or at least approaching that. 426 acting credits. So his first one is in 1977. He did a movie called Joyride. Most recent one is 2022. I mean, the guy's still working.
Wow.
He did two episodes of a kid show called Surfside Girls, which I've never heard of it. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about Joyride because there's some interesting stuff there. So Joyride, again, 1977. I'll read the synopsis. Three teenagers leave Los Angeles and drive north to Alaska, wind up robbing a pipeline and taking one of the employees hostage. But here's why it's interesting. So it's got four leads, right? Desi Arnaz Jr., Robert Carradine, Melanie Griffith, and Anne Lockhart. All four of them are kids of big stars. So it's all, you know, it's almost like a Once Upon a Time in Hollywood thing. So Desi Arnaz Jr., of course, Lucy and Desi.
Yep.
Robert Carradine is John Carradine's kid. And the character, there were many Carradines. David Carradine, Keith Carradine. Robert Carradine was most famous probably for Revenge of the Nerds.
Okay.
He wasn't the guy who played Goose. He was the other guy.
Okay.
Right? Goose was in it, right? Anthony Edwards? No? I don't know. I don't remember his name. Anyway, Melanie Griffith is Tippi Hedren's daughter. Tippi Hedren, probably most famous for The Birds. Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. And then Anne Lockhart is June Lockhart's daughter. June Lockhart was in a lot of stuff, but Lost in Space is probably what she's most famous for.
Okay.
So that's her. So his most famous roles, though. So this guy, Richard Reel, here's how I recognize him. He's the guy, he's in Office Space. He's the guy who got...
Yes, who got fired. The jump to conclusions, Matt. Was that guy?
Yes, the guy. Something happened to him. He got hit by a car.
He got hit by a car. He was trying to kill himself.
Is that what it was?
He tried to kill himself in his garage with carbon monoxide, but his foot hit the gas or something, and he backed out of the garage, he ended up getting hit by a garbage truck or something.
Right. I just remember him being injured. It's like the best thing that ever happened to him, right?
I was thinking the same thing. This is the guy, by the way, from Problem Child. That's what I was thinking. He's got a kind of similar look.
That guy's been in a million things, too. Yeah, for sure.
Kind of similar. But yes, it's a jump to conclusions, Matt. And he's got just like this mat that he's built. He's an inventor now. And it's like, you think of an idea, and then you jump to the conclusions. It's brilliant. People are like, okay.
I remember because it was at a party he was telling everyone about that. Yes. Right? Yeah.
He did like a full body cast, so you're right. At one point.
That's the I remember from that, but I also remember him. He was the banker in Casino. So you know the movie Casino?
I do know the movie.
He's the guy, so he's a legitimate banker. He has, I think, only one scene in the movie. It's in De Niro's house, and Joe Pesci comes over, and Joe Pesci giving his money to this banker, and Joe Pesci wants his money. And the banker's like, well, I can't just go do that. He's like, I don't think you understand. If you don't have my money tomorrow, I'm going to come over with a baseball bat and I'll beat you in your skull. And you're going to go coma, and I'm going to go to jail. He goes, and right around the time I'm getting out of jail, you're going to be waking up from that coma, and I'm going to come back and I'll beat you in your skull again. Because that's how fucked up I am. I don't give a shit. But the guy he's talking to is this dude.
Okay.
Is Richard Reel. Yeah. Okay. So that was only two projects I really knew, I recognized from. But when you look at his stuff, he's been in a million things. I'll name him. I'll name some of his notable projects for you. Glory, Quantum Leap, going into the 90s, Golden Girls, Fried Green Tomatoes, Free Willy, The Fugitive, of course, Casino, Ally McBeal, Buffy the TV show, that came up again, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Lethal Weapon 4, they're making a Lethal Weapon 5, by the way.
Why not?
I guess, but Danny, what's his name?
Danny Glover?
He's got to be into his 70s at this point, right?
He's getting too damn old for this shit.
I mean, he was retiring in the first one, right? And the first one's over 30. He's got to be 80 years old. Look up, how old is Danny Glover?
You don't watch Only Murders in the Building, do you?
I don't.
Oh,
I don't.
My gosh.
Is it good? I heard it's
Martin,
great.
Martin Short and Selena Gomez, actually. But Steve Martin's character is an old, sort of, it's almost like a Banachek name. I forget his name, but it's like an old TV crime solver type. And he references it a lot, and they bring him back, and spoiler alert, they bring him back in the second season. They want to recast the show and do it again. Brazos is the name of the show. But they bring him back and he's like in a wheelchair and he's like lost his mental faculties. And he's like, what? And they're like, oh yeah. You're now, Brazos is now it's like an African-American young woman and she's Brazos and you're the uncle that she's relying on for tips, but you're like senile. And in a way he's like, oh, like he thought he got his career back basically. But yeah, I don't remember why. Why did I just reference that?
Well, Danny Glover, he's born in 1946.
Danny Glover being in Lethal Weapon again. That's what he's going to come back as. He's going to be.
But I think they're doing the original characters. Murdaugh, right? Murdaugh? I don't remember. But it's obviously, what's his face? Mel Gibson. I guess he's got his career back now. People are forgetting him for all the horrible stuff he said. Sugar tits, I think.
Yes, sugar tits.
And all the anti-Semitic
stuff. Yeah.
But but 1946, I mean, at some point, I mean, the whole gist of the first movie is he's retiring.
Yeah.
Yes. So he did that. What else did he do? He did Office Space. We're talking about The West Wing, Joe Dirt, ER, Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie one. He was Bill Cosby in Bridesmaids. Remember they mentioned Bill Cosby? It's the mechanic who I think we only see him at the very end. Bill Cosby ends up kind of, and it seems that he dates Kristen Wiig's mom. But the joke is his name's Bill Cosby, spelled differently. But anyway,
yeah.
And then he did Modern Family as well. So he's done a million things.
Oh man,
that's Richard Reel
all over the place. Then,
so he did some interesting stuff. So I like to find the stuff that's forgotten, we got some interesting ones, and we'll wrap this thing up soon. But Richard Reel, if you do 200 and whatever projects, you're gonna have some bad ones. So I got to find this one for you. So he did in 1990 did an episode of a TV show called Nasty Boys. I'm going to read this for you. The Nasty Boys are a special unit of the North Las Vegas Police Department. The unit wait till the end. The payoff is at the end of the synopsis, okay? So the unit consists of undercover cops and their identities are withheld, even from the department. They only answer to their boss, Lieutenant Krieger, who in turn only answers to the chief. And if there is ever an instance that they have to bust the people they are working on, they wear ninja-type outfits to conceal their identities. So these are cops who dress as ninjas and...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So the lead in that.
They turn into the Power Rangers and they. Yeah.
It's insane. Okay. Yeah. It's hard to pull off a ninja outfit in a show that's trying to be serious. Unless it's actually about ninjas. I don't know. Even then.
True.
It stars Benjamin Bratt. He's most famous for Law & Order and Dating Julia Roberts, like in the early 2000s, I think, or 90s, I forget. Also had Dennis Franz in it. He was Sipowicz. Mm-hmm. Remember Sipowicz in NYPD Blue?
Yeah.
So then he does 1991, another bad show, an episode of something called Broken Badges. I'm going to read this one for you, too. You find these things, you're like, who approved this? So here's... Oh, this is another great, this is a great synopsis. Okay, so this is Broken Badges. What did it, it ran 1990 for 7 episodes. That's 7 too many. Jack Bowman is a cop from New Orleans who doesn't exactly play by the rules. When he is sent to California on a brief assignment, he is wrongfully blamed for something he didn't do. To get out of the jam he's in, he recruits cops who are on psychiatric leave. Bullet Tingredis, a female cop who's addicted to danger. Stanley Jones, a cop who walks around with a ventriloquist dummy. And who has a short fuse when people make fun of his stature. And Toby Baker, a kleptomaniac. After sorting things out, the chief of police decides to form a unit with Bowman and them. And a psychiatrist, Priscilla Mather, keeps an eye on them. So that's the show. This is a bunch of, it's a bunch of lunatics. The lead in this is a guy named Miguel Farrar. And I'd heard the name. I mean, he's one of those, he's kind of recognizable. But what's interesting about him, he was Rosemary Clooney's son. He's George Clooney's cousin. That's the only reason I've ever heard of him. George Clooney was really close with him. And I remember him mentioning Miguel Farrar on his show and on Howard Stern's show. And anyway, mm-hmm. So that's that. He passed away in 2017. It also featured Ernie Hudson. He was one of the Ghostbusters.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, last thing on Richard Reel. I think one of the last things. So in 1992, he does the movie Body of Evidence. Do you remember Body of Evidence? It's okay. So Body of Evidence, here, you're a little too young maybe. It was a big deal because this was back when they were doing like the, it was a big thing to do like those erotic thrillers, right? So you had like, I wrote some down. Basic Instinct, yeah, right?
Yep.
Color of Night, which was, I told you, A Hint of Dong.
A skosh.
Just a skosh. Yeah. A pinch of schlong, if you will. That, you know, and Jade was one of them. Sliver, another with the same girl from Basic Instinct. Can't think of her name. Sharon Stone. So that was a big deal. So Body of Evidence was one of those. 1992. I'll read you the synopsis and I'll tell you the cast. And you'll see why it was a big deal. A lawyer defends a woman accused of killing her older lover by having sex with him. So she fucked her husband to death. Mm. And that woman played by Madonna.
Oh.
So this is a big deal. So 1992 comes out. And when you're a young fan of Czech, like, yeah. Madonna. Madonna?
I'm interested.
A lot of nudity?
Mostly just the plot. Yeah,
I'm in.
More than anything.
So yeah, so that's how I knew it. And she does get all kinds of naked in it.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So yeah, so okay. Suffice to say I rented that film a few minutes. Pause.
did someone call my name in the back room? I've got to go. They need me back there.
Yeah, it was a disaster of a movie, but she did get all kinds of naked. And her other lead in it is, and it's sad to see things like this, was Willem Dafoe. Because he's a great actor. I don't think anyone will see that guy have sex, though. But anyway, so star Madonna, Willem Dafoe, Richard Reel was in it. Last one I promised on this guy. He did something called Holy Matrimony. And the only reason I wanted to show it to you, because I literally wanted to show it to you, this really made me laugh. So I'll read the synopsis, right? Because then the picture will make sense. A young Hutterite boy, Hutterite, H-U-T-T-E-R-I-T, Hutterite? I don't know if that's like an Amish thing.
Sounds like Mennonite. Like
yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. The picture suggests that as well. A young Hutterite boy must marry his late brother's wife who comes from outside the community. And I'm going to show you the picture.
Oh my God.
That kid's doing all right. That's Patricia Arquette and it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah, JGL.
Yeah. I'm like, that's nice. A happy kid. I'd be all over that when I was a little boy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'm 11, and now I have to marry, like, a 23-year-old Patricia Arquette. I'm in. So, anyway, so I thought it was funny. So, I wanted you to look at that poster. A quick mention, though. Last thing on Richard Reel. Quick mention. 1998, he did an episode of Columbo, one of my favorite shows. It was called Ashes to Ashes. And it also starred Edie McClurg. Edie McClurg was Ed Rooney's secretary in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought I'd mention that. A little quick tie into the movie.
Yeah.
So Richard Reel versus Jeffrey Jones. Now, I think, you know, Jeffrey Jones is a big dog. Do you remember Jeffrey Jones? Should I pull him up for you? Do you remember his look?
Yeah. Yeah.
But here's the thing. We didn't talk about
mustache this. Mustache and getting eaten by the dog and all that. Yeah.
Yes. So Jeffrey Jones, though, man, we got some stuff here. So that's why I got to vote for Richard Reel.
I got to go on a limb and say there's almost no chance he's beating Richard Reel. But
it's not good.
Yeah.
So this is Jeffrey Jones. And I remember this. I had to read about it, but I remember it happening. In 2002, Jones was arrested for possession of child pornography and accused by a 17-year-old boy of solicitation to pose for nude photographs, blah, blah. He pleaded no contest. So his career was effectively ended. Sadly, it really wasn't. I don't think. I mean, he's got more projects after that. I don't know if they're any good. But anyway, so that's Jeffrey Jones. I'm voting for Richard Reel.
Richard Reel.
Richard Reel wins. Richard Reel wins. So, oh, we have one more character. I totally forgot. Jeannie Buehler.
Jeannie Buehler. Jennifer Buehler. Aniston. Let's go.
All right, and this is fun. So
this is a tough one, though.
This is a tough one. So Jennifer Grey, she's in the movie. All right, Jennifer Aniston's in the show. So Jennifer Aniston, we know, I'm going to talk about her early career because we know her later career. 73 acting credits. Her first one is 1988 movie, Mac and Me. So again, 1988, very quickly, first credit, boom. 1990, she's in an NBC show. All these people, except for Richard Reel, who's been around forever. But anyway, and her most recent is The Morning Show on Apple TV. Do you watch that?
Love that.
I've not seen it. Yeah. It's good, huh?
Really good. It's hits, I'm not going to say it hits close to home for like for me, but it hits current events wise. It's kind of a Me Too.
Is Carell still in it?
Or no? Well, I don't want to like spoil anything, but yes, he was in... He's the Matt Lauer.
Oh.
He's the Matt Lauer.
And he lives out that storyline? Yep. Okay, yep. That makes sense. That makes sense. Okay.
It's like very similar to the whole Matt Lauer thing.
Interesting. Okay. Yep. Yeah, I forget
about... Reese Witherspoon's in it too, and it's fantastic, and so is Aniston.
She's like the younger anchor, correct? Something like that effect, or no?
A little bit younger, yeah.
Okay.
She's the more like opinionated, like brash, tell like it is. She finds she's a champion of causes and stuff, and Jennifer's like this came up in the man's world, and it's like, you know, she just is like, shut up and let's do our job kind of thing.
Got it. I feel like I always forget about Apple TV.
Very good. Yeah.
I always forget about it.
I only got it for Ted Lasso.
That's the only reason I got it, Ted Lasso.
And then after Ted Lasso, I was like, okay, well, I know I've heard The Morning Show is really good. I think Newsroom is on there too.
Oh, okay.
I think you can see it on there too. So I was like, I'd like to watch that at some point.
I've not seen that either.
Yeah. I've heard good things.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. It's weird. I don't know. Apple TV is never on my radar except for Ted Lasso, which hasn't been on for a while.
Yep. Worth the watch.
Well, I'm going to check it out.
Got to check it out.
I will check it out. So her first movie is Mac and Me from 1988. Again, this is one of those movies I remember because of the box. So I live in a world of where I just remember everything but the box. But I'll read the synopsis. An alien trying to escape from NASA is befriended by a wheelchair-bound boy. So that's what I remember. I remember being kind of like an E.T. movie.
It's very E.T., yeah.
Yeah, it was. And even the alien even looks like E.T. Look at the cover. Right? That looks like E.T., doesn't it?
I feel like, yes.
Yeah, that's a straight up rip-off.
That is E.T.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't think I've ever seen it. But one interesting actor in this, though, is Danny Cooksey is in it. Danny Cooksey, he was the little red-haired kid that they brought in towards the end of Different Strokes. So Gary Coleman's getting older. They bring in a red-haired kid named Sam, real annoying kid, sang country music and all that. But later on, as he got older, he was John Connor's friend in Terminator 2, who's the kid with the long red hair.
Okay.
And he was in a show that my wife watched. I was a little too old for it, called Salute Your Shorts.
Yeah. Yep.
He was in that. But anyway, it caught my
Danny. That was pretty epic for a generation.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So he was in that. He had long red hair. Okay. He looked like a total white trash, you know, in Terminator 2. But Ferris Bueller was only her fourth credit. So another quick rise. She had help. So let's talk about this. As you mentioned earlier, people, you know, have a rich uncle or whatever. So her dad is John Aniston, right? So he's an actor, most famous for like daytime stuff, Days of Our Lives, right? Her godfather, though, is Telly Savalas. So I've got a picture up here on TV Guide. He was Kojak. So this is her godfather. You know, she's Greek. Aniston's not her real last name. It's a variation of it. Her dad was actually born in Greece. Telly Savalas, famously Greek, everything Greek with him. So, you know, her godfather is a famous actor. Her dad's a famous actor. But Jennifer Grey also had help. So Jennifer Grey's dad is Joel Grey. He's super successful. He's most famous as probably a producer, but he's an actor, singer, dancer, producer. He's won an Oscar. He's won a Tony, and he's won a Golden Globe.
Ooh.
So you got the two Jennifers, Grey and Aniston, both have a lot of help.
Yeah.
Let's look at Jennifer Aniston's pre-Friends career, because we know what happens there.
Yep.
Interesting stuff. This one makes me laugh, because I love always finding a way to bring Blossom into it. So her second credit is a TV show called Malloy. 1990, it only ran 7 episodes. 11-year-old Malloy Martin's life. Malloy? Molly? I guess it's Malloy. I don't know. 11-year-old Malloy Martin's life is turned upside down when her mother dies, and she must move from New York to LA to live with her father, stepmother, and stepsisters, step-siblings, whatever. Malloy is a young Mayim Bialik who played Blossom.
Yeah.
One of those step-siblings is Jennifer Aniston. There's the picture. Look at old Jan Aniston.
Wow.
There. Yeah. The nose is still a little bit different. She didn't have the surgery yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know. But anyway, that's Jennifer Aniston with the... Anyway, so I love finding a way to bring in Blossom. By the way, I'm not even a big Blossom fan.
Well, it sounded like you were from the finale. You were a huge Blossom fan.
I bring it up. I try to bring it up all the time because it just makes me laugh. It's just become an inside joke at this point because I always find a way to bring it up. Yeah. It wasn't a show that I love particularly, but I did watch it a lot.
She did Big Bang Theory more recently.
Yeah.
Mayim Bialik. And now is hosting Jeopardy, right?
She hosts some of that. She has her own show again. Which one of the actors? So Leslie Jordan just died. He's famous. He's an elderly gay man, really famous in that world. Real funny guy. I guess I didn't see it, but I guess he had a recurring role in Will and Grace. I never watched Will and Grace, but he just died. He car accident. They think he had a heart attack, but she was all over social media saying, you know, he was actually on the way to that set. I forget what it's called. Cat is the name of the show. Anyway, I don't know. Hmm. It's her new show that I'm not watching. But yeah, I was trying to find a way to bring that up. Then Jennifer Aniston. So that's 1990. Seven episodes. She was in all seven of them. 1990, though, she did a TV movie called Camp Cucamonga. This is worth talking about, too, because I remember this. So Camp Cucamonga, I'll read it to you, and then I'll explain what it is. So standard camp shenanigans and romance amongst the counselors and the campers at a lakefront summer camp. Mm-hmm. What this was is, I'll read out the cast to you. They did this a lot. ABC in particular, I'm assuming this is ABC. Anyway, they would take the stars of all their shows and throw them into a made-for-TV movie, the young stars, right? So, like, for example, this one, John Ratzenberger's in it. And not that he's a young star, but he was in Cheers. He was Cliff Clavin. Chad Allen, who was a young star at the time. Jennifer Aniston, a young star. A young Candace Cameron was in it. Danica McKellar, she was the girl in Wonder Years. Oh, God. Can't remember her. How do I not remember her name in Wonder Years? Because I had such a crush on her. You're a little too young for that. But anyway, that sucks. Who else was in this? Breckenmeyer, you know, he's gone on to do a lot of stuff. Brian Robbins, who was on Head of the Class. Josh Saviano, who was the best friend in Wonder Years. So they take all the kids and they slap them together into a movie.
Yeah.
That was what this one was, Camp Cucamonga. They did two that I remember better, though. There was one called Dance Till Dawn in 1988. There was another one in 1988 called Crash Course. And the reason I remember these two is because the star of both of those was Alyssa Milano. Okay. Now, 1988 Alyssa Milano,
Look out.
She was my first like major crush.
Yeah.
So when I was like in sixth grade, I peaked early. A lot of the girls liked me when I was young. Sixth grade, some got a lot of girls had crushes on me. And a way, I guess, to win my affections, if you will, they had all those teeny bopper magazines, like, you know, whatever the hell the name, Teen Bop and this, that, the other thing. And they knew I liked Alyssa Milano. So they'd always give me all those magazines came with posters that you pull out.
Yeah.
So they always give me those. So I had an entire wall.
The girls that had crushes on you would give you posters of Alyssa Milano.
Yeah. I know. It doesn't make sense. That's but, you know, they were, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to win me over, I guess. But I had an entire wall of Alyssa Milano. You know, yeah.
I had a framed picture of Jennifer Aniston.
That's funny.
Probably 94, 95 range, somewhere there.
I had a picture of her up on my dorm room wall my freshman year of college. Yep. It was the Rolling Stone cover she did. Because remember, she wasn't wearing pants in it. She's laying on her stomach, and her butt is showing, but it's kind of blurred. But there's something about that picture. I just ripped off that cover and slapped it up on my wall. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jen Aniston, man. Yeah, she's
a big fan of hers.
I can't blame you there. So then, you know, 1993, she did Leprechaun. So this is pre-Friends. I've not seen Leprechaun. An evil, sadistic leprechaun goes on a killing rampage in search of his beloved pot of gold. That should have killed her career. It didn't, because the next year she got Friends and things took off. Which sucks, because that robbed us of future Leprechauns featuring Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, could have been more.
Because they fought on. I mean, they made sequels. I mean, there is Leprechaun 2 and 3, but they robbed us of Jennifer Aniston's character. And I feel like the story is not complete. So Jennifer Aniston versus Jennifer Grey. What are you giving me?
Well, Jennifer Grey started dancing, right? That's baby.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Jennifer Aniston's had a much bigger career.
I can't possibly go against Jennifer Aniston personally.
Yeah.
Especially after what I just told you.
You got to give it to Jennifer Aniston, but here's what I'll say. Bigger career, obviously, Jennifer Grey really messed up her career by having a nose job. I'm right, they both had nose jobs. Jennifer Aniston did it, though, before she was famous. Jennifer Grey, I don't know what she was thinking. Like, cause what Jennifer Grey did that Jennifer Aniston never did, well, that's not true because of Friends, but Jennifer Aniston Grey was in, like, timeless shit, like epic stuff. Dirty Dancing is never going to go away.
Yep.
I'd argue that Ferris Bueller's Day Off is never going to go away.
Yep.
But then she had the nose job. She's unrecognizable. You can't do, no actor can do that. George Clooney can't go fix his jaw and look different. You just can't do it.
Yeah.
And she did that and it just derailed her career. It's nuts.
Yeah, I think this is a tougher decision.
Mm-hmm.
Very respectable for both of them.
Sure.
Couple of epic roles for sure. But again, I'm all in on Aniston.
I'm with you though. Jennifer Aniston has to win that. So Jennifer Aniston takes it. Okay. So let's give out some awards. This one, there is no one to give it to, but I have the Damn I Didn't Have Anything Better to Do award, which is when you have an actor who's in the movie and then does a TV show. I scrolled and I scrolled. I wanted to find one. Even an extra would have been great. I couldn't find anything. Best casting choice of those. Who do you think is the best? So when you look at the
Richard
TV.
Richard Reel, right? I mean, like Richard Reel.
Yeah, I like Richard Reel. I think that's
The Bueller was like a fine, but Cam was bad.
That Cam was bad.
You know?
Yeah.
Richard
Reel was a good one.
You did like Sloane.
So I did. Amy Dolan's. I think Richard Reel. I'm also going to say they got lucky, but you could also make the argument for Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, that's true.
Because that's the one thing even keeping the show kind of interesting. Like, yeah. If I tell you they made a Ferris Bueller TV show, you don't care. If I tell, oh, but Jennifer Aniston was in it. Oh,
that's But see, I would think Jennifer Aniston and Sloane would be what I would have done, potentially. Because that's more the love interest. Like, you know, it's his sister. Like, yeah. You know, I don't know. Like,
well, that's a...
I would have rather seen her as Sloane.
That's an interesting comment. Yeah, because Jen... Yeah. I think you're right. I'll go with Richard Reel. All right. You won me over on that one. That's a great point. She's too... Yeah, because Jeannie wasn't, like, hot. You didn't want to... Whereas Jennifer Aniston's like, man, she's hot, you know?
Yeah.
It probably arguably hotter than Amy Dolan. Well, definitely hotter than Amy Dolan's. And that doesn't make sense.
Cause, right? You don't want his sister to be hotter than his girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's weird.
At least not in the North.
Yeah, yeah. It's not West Virginia. It's
no.
Either.
But, all right, you won me over. I was actually going to say Jennifer Aniston, but I think I'll go with Richard Reel. Worst casting choice. For me, it's Brandon Douglas.
Yeah.
I don't like that kid as Cam.
I'll agree. Yeah.
Because, again, all of them you've seen in archetype, but that one just has to be quirky. It could have been, I'm not saying this, but it could have been Dustin Diamond. Like, just a weirdo. He's a different kind of quirky, but you could throw anyone just kind of off in there. And I wouldn't have used Dustin Diamond, just to make that clear. But instead they got, like, again, it's even more normal than Ferris. I just thought it was very odd. I don't know. I didn't like him. That's my worst casting.
Okay, I'm with you.
What was better, the TV show or the movie?
Definitely the TV show, obviously. It's way better.
Should this have even been attempted? Now, think back. Okay, it's 1990. This show, the movie came out 4 years ago. It's a hit movie. It's iconic. We're not going to make a sequel to the movie because Broderick won't do it. Should we even attempt it?
So here's my thought on this. Mm-hmm. Number one, because it's iconic and because there's so much appeal to the character of Ferris himself, the conversation should have been had. Hey, should we find a way to elongate this? Mm-hmm. Should this show have been made? No, I think that's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
But should they have explored the idea of making a show? Maybe.
Yeah.
The one thing that I have questioned about it is, like, the mythology of Ferris Bueller. Like, in the movie, you don't see the backstory. You don't see how he became what he became. But everyone in town, Chicago, everyone in town knows this guy.
His save Ferris was
on the water thing. Yeah. You're sending flowers to the house. Like, the cops are like, hey, tell your son, you know, whatever. Like, they're just, everyone is, like, in love with this kid, right?
Right.
You sort of don't want to see how that was made because it would be really hard to make that.
Yeah.
Like, you almost have to just believe it as soon as you see it in the movie, and that's it. I don't know that it would make for good TV to see a full, here's how he became so iconic, you know?
I agree. Yeah.
So I don't know.
I for me, it would have been as soon as, and I don't know what led to this. For me, it's when John Yoo says he doesn't want to be involved. Yeah.
That's a perfect point, though. Yeah.
But you know what you could have done? It's not such a unique concept. It's like, why not? Okay, we're not going to make it because Broderick doesn't want to do it. And what you said and John Hughes. Why don't we make a version of it? Like a Parker Lewis Candless or Van Wilder.
Yeah.
Smart-ass kid, kind of runs the school. He's got a hot girlfriend, a weirdo friend. We'll make his sister a pain in the ass. Or instead of that, we'll make it a brother who's a pain in the ass. Or we'll make it a crazy uncle who's a pain in the ass.
Right.
Whatever. Throw a bully in there. Boom. Same thing. You know what I mean? Like, so that's way more what I would have done. I would say, okay, screw you then. We'll do the story, but just not the characters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. When you attach that name to it, there's certain expectations that I think are almost impossible to
live. That's a great, that brand is what messes. The story could have been done, but not the brand. All right. Now, that was 1986. It's 2022. Could it be attempted today? You have Netflix. You have prestige TV. You have movie stars doing TV. Could you now, and we've done it like years later, you do like a Parenthood from a 1980s movie. Could it be done today?
I would see them remaking the movie today.
Oh,
that would be interesting.
Yeah. But you don't see like a couple episodes on Netflix, something like that.
TV. I think it'd have the same issues, which is like, how do you explain the mythology? How do you explain this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, him living
in this world.
Yeah.
Or do you keep it in the 80s? I don't know.
There's a lot to be said about 80s shows and earlier, of course, too, where there's like so much disbelief. They're like, oh, that could never be done now. We're like, you give your car to the car parking lot attendant, which is not even a thing really anymore. Like, you give him the keys and he's going on a joyride, and like people like track their cars now. Like, just there's so much technology now that makes it harder for people to suspend disbelief. Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know. Yeah, your parents don't have like alarms in their house that your principal's snooping around your yard. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that now would be, I think, just kind of bizarre. They'd have to remake a lot of those components. But
yeah,
I think they could. I think they could remake the movie. And do like the exact same storyline, you know, not really change it.
Yeah.
And it would be interesting enough because it's been 35 years, you know?
Sure. All right.
But it does make me want to show it to my kids at some point, like high school age, because the story, the takeaway from it is great, I think, which is like, hey, live life, you know, you only get one shot and this is like these are your best years to have no responsibility and like, you know, don't go crazy. It's not like you did anything like totally off the wall. He's not snorting coke off of a hooker's ass or anything, but Have fun.
Yeah. Life moves pretty fast.
Life moves pretty fast.
Yeah. Well, that is Ferris Bueller, the TV show. Thank you for joining me. I appreciate it. That was fun.
Billy Mack in the house.
That's right. Billy Mack.
Festering turn of a podcast.
Festering turn. All right. Thanks so much for joining me. And always stay tuned for the next episode of Fanacheck. Well, that was the season 2 kickoff. Ferris Bueller, a movie that should have never been made into a show, but I'm glad it was because I got to talk about it. I want to thank my guest, Billy Mack. He's always a fantastic guest. Sadly, I kind of forgot his name halfway through. Otherwise, I would have referenced Love Actually more because that's one of my favorite movies. Check out his podcast, Folding the Cheese. Great fantasy football podcast. Also, check me out on Twitter, at Fanacheck Podcast. You can email me, fanacheckpodcast@gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook, Real Fanacheck. Feel free to hit me up. I'm also sending out stickers. I'll even pay for postage because that's how much I want to win friends. Anyway, thank you for listening. And as always, stick around for the next episode of Fanacheck.